Hello and welcome to Moving Iron podcast number 48. On this episode, I'm joined with Aaron Fintel. And today, Aaron and I are going to discuss what we saw happen at the BE Implement auction that we watched on the internet yesterday. So, Aaron, how's it going, bud?
Going good. Big shocker, everyone. Aaron Fintel's on the podcast. Yeah. Everybody, catch your breath quick.
Everyone's favorite bull in the china closet right there, folks.
Bull in the china shop. There you have it.
All right, so we watched that auction yesterday, and I was interested in it from the fact that there's such a drought going on in the wheat belt, whether you're Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, no matter where you're at, it feels like there's a giant drought going on. So I was wanting to see how values held up, and I felt like overall there was a fairly good – I wouldn't say that I was shocked by anything, but I wasn't let down by anything either. So I feel like there was a pretty good – sample of stuff that happened there. So what's your opinion here?
Yeah, I would echo your statement on that. You know, nothing shocked me, and for sure nothing was a disappointment. If anything, I was surprised in the strong values. Mm-hmm. More than anything, if I was to tie a thought or emotion to the results of it, I would say surprised at the strong number.
Well, the one thing that I that struck me, and you and I talked about this right after the auction, was the 8Rs and stuff that had 4,000 and 5,000 hours on them, and how strong those numbers were comparatively to what we saw. You know, even we have in our inventory that we're having a hard time getting rid of, and what was selling down there. So, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by that value. I was kind of concerned with what was going to happen there, but I think, you know, I think overall those tractors are pretty strong.
Well, not only just those, but like 5,000-6,000 hour 30 series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. My goodness, that would tell me those tractors bringing that much in that location with that. You know, of course they're in the heart of cotton, and cotton's been one of the few bright things in American agriculture lately, but. And those tractors in that location with current prices and drought and all that stuff, there is that yesterday would tell you just from that little result or that little window to look at that there is a big gap in the world in that specific tractor.
Right.
And higher hour 30 series, you know,
right.
That I would have guessed 20 grand below where they're at.
Right. Well, that too. And then, you know, we talked about it when you and I and Zach were all on this last time, that how auctions come together, and every once in a while there's like the perfect climate comes together and you have this amazing sell, right? I'm not going to sit there and say this was an amazing sell by any means, but think about this. If this same situation was happening with this auction, and you had the wheat in the condition that it was, and cotton was still 55, 60 cents a pound. I mean, how bad would that auction probably have been? It would have been probably a wreck. But with 50-plus cent cotton, that was really the one thing that saved it. And no one's planted any cotton yet, so they don't have to worry about it coming up. So they're still, you know, like Brandon said on the previous podcast, they're still gin and cotton down there, so they're still waiting for payment. So.
Well, yeah, I know. I've seen on numerous social media outlets, there's guys still stripping, you know, stripper cotton. Yeah. In Oklahoma and Texas, guys are still out getting it, and it's almost February.
Yeah, so it's...
But I also know, talking to guys, you know, I've talked to quite a few guys from Oklahoma and Kansas here the last 2 weeks, say, and everybody's like, you know, we grew cotton years ago, and we quit, and planted some last year and worked out okay, so they're kind of like pinning their ears back toward cotton. So
yeah, well, being from southern Kansas, that very southern edge of Kansas along the Oklahoma border for the longest time was kind of hit or miss as far as what cotton was, and it was a big deal in the mid-90s, probably all the way up till I have to, you know, probably 95 to 99. I'm kind of trying to go through my head here real quick and remember what it was, but there were guys that were traditional row crop guys that did nothing but cotton. You know what I mean? That was really their
right.
their bread and butter, and that kind of fizzled out in the like probably early 2000s, and now cotton now it was pretty much just a rotational crop that guys still grow because there's a cotton gin close by, you know what I mean? And they're still kind of feeding that stuff in Oklahoma, and there's I think there might be one out in Western Kansas, South Pratt, someplace I think, but
Yeah, there is.
so that's still feeding that, and you know, guys right now are looking at $3 wheat still. They're still looking at, or not $3 wheat, but cheap wheat still in the threes, and you know, we're still looking at corn the way it is, and soybeans the way they are. If you can step out and get a lick on cotton, then you're going to be all right.
Right. Well, you know, that's funny that we're sitting here talking about that era. And I remember seeing, you know, when I was myself in central to southern Kansas there in the late 90s, there was, you know, a fair amount of it down in that part of the world. And being the tractor geek I was, I can remember in the 90s looking at Fastline and stuff and a substantial amount of cotton equipment, you know, especially in the southwest quadrant of the state. And, you know, what did you have in the, you know, 95, 96 was pretty good price years of corn, but by the time you got to 98, corn was like $1.75. So hell yeah, there was cotton, you know. Then from that moment until when was it, 13, 12 or 13, you know, every damn year it ticked up, ticked up, ticked up a little bit. And then in the what, mid-2000s, you had the big ethanol push, and it jumped up, and then it stayed there, and then it ticked up, ticked up, ticked up, and then it jumped up again, and then it fell flat ass out of bed. And during that slow and steady climb, you know, everybody kind of jumped out of it and went back to the corn world, and now corn's fallen out of bed on its face and embarrassed itself in front of all its friends, and they're back in the cotton, so.
Well, it's very, so I think what you're describing there is it's a very cyclical business that we're in. Things come and go.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because I can remember, you know, one of my first years doing the wholesale thing would have been like 2010, and everybody and their dog down south was, we need 12 row 30 inch planters to plant corn. We're going to plant a bunch of corn. We're going to plant a bunch of corn. And there was, guys were jumping on them things everywhere they could get them, you know. 12 row 30, 17, 20s were going, sold tons of them, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, just, you know, East Texas, where those guys were traditional corn guys. And I don't keep track of the price of cotton, but I think it was bad enough that they jumped on that corn boat, bull seat, you know, let's roll. And then conversely, here in the last year, you know, the CS690 and the CP690, John Deere picker and stripper bale module pickers, or cotton harvesters, both the stripper and the picker, were like the hottest thing in America. And, you know, it's just their case in point right there. That's your cyclical thing. It's not like Corn Belt where, you know, your difference year to year is the percentage of your rotation. Not, well, hey, let's, you know, especially you look at, you know, say Corn Belt, even the northern, say northern half of the Wheat Belt, which I don't know if that's a real thing, but it's what I call Texas, you know, up through Nebraska, the Dakotas, into Canada, that north and south strip. And, you know, even the north half of that, or the Corn Belt, so to speak, there's not a hell of a lot of options in rotation. Whereas, you know, you got your cotton region guys, they can sprinkle that in if it's good. You got your, and then you go southeast of that, and tell they can go hog wild on carrots if they want, so.
Right. So the auction that we watched yesterday, coupled with what we saw happen at the end of the year,
Hey, real quick, you know what was not on that auction yesterday?
but
A combine.
I thought you were going to say Gator.
No, there was gators on there. There was not a combine on that yesterday. It is very odd.
There wasn't any.
A dealer. No, there wasn't.
Yeah, there wasn't. There wasn't any harvesting equipment on that auction.
There was. Yeah, there wasn't a, you know, a 6600. There wasn't an S690. There was nothing.
And I'll take that back. There were some heads. There were some combine heads that were on there. But
yeah, there were some heads, but there's no combines.
Yeah, no power.
When was the last time you saw a dealer auction without a combine on it?
I don't know that I ever have, to be honest. That was a first.
Whereas there's probably some dealer auctions where they're like, shit, we should put one tractor on there at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take our 25
combine. So that was.
I'm up in two with one tractor.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So
that was kind of neat. I was pondering that last night driving down the road that, hey, there was not a single combine on that deal.
So when you saw what happened in the year, you saw what happened yesterday, how do you think that's going to affect the overall marketplace moving forward?
I feel like, to use a Casey Seymour trademark term, there's just more and more evidence of the hashtag soft bottom out there in the industry. And in fact, you know, going back to, say, even the beginning of 17 into now, it feels like maybe that bottom isn't so soft. Maybe it just is. You know, if you want to create something to look at in the industry. I'm trying to think of the damn term. Create a trend, if you will.
Okay.
There's data to support. Listen to me. I sound really smart. Sorry, everyone. There's data to support from, if you look at, say, January 17 to January 18,
mm-hmm.
dare I say it, an uptick.
Yeah, there's an uptick, but it's very,
it's minuscule, but it's a freaking uptick. It ain't like it's going down.
Well, the uptick. Okay, so if you do the side by side comparison of your data points here, you're trying to make, if you say, okay, the auction data uptick versus the downtick in overall supply of equipment on the internet, I bet they mirror each other, which is from the beginning of 2016 through the end of 2017, that line, that trend line between all those pieces of equipment was going down as far as what's listed on the internet, was absolutely going down, but it was, you'd still have to pedal a bike to go down the hill, right? You're not going to coast down that hill, but, and I would say,
and it depends on how fast you want to go and how much your tires are aired up.
You would still have to pedal your bike pretty
well. What kind of bike it is, how big the wheels are, how much the rider weighs.
It would be, well, the more you weigh and the more aired up your tires are, the more that allows the force to carry you down the hill. So you would go faster.
There you go. That's why when I'm downhill on a bike, it looks like a rocket.
That is true. I've seen that.
So what you're saying is there's less items listed just in general, not picking on anything, but less items in general listed today than a year ago, which is having an impact on values.
Right. And that correlation, what I'm saying is a correlation between the downward trend in overall inventories that you see, whether it's, and there's four that I look at: combines, planters, sprayers, and tractors over 175 horsepower. Those four right there are what I really pay attention to the most. I should start throwing in 100 horsepower to 175 horsepower tractors in that mix as well. But those four is what I really pay attention to, and every one of those have a downward trend line from January 1 of 2016.
Downward trend meaning less available in the marketplace.
Now, if you flip that and said, all right, we're going to do that same trend line from January 1, 2016 through the end of 2017, auction value-wise, I would bet you would see the same level of increase in auction values that you would see as a comparative to each trend line. Whether you're
like the same, you're talking like the same degree.
Yeah.
Off of
flat. Auction value is going to be coming up at the same rate,
right,
as the other ones cross is going down. So we're seeing some of that stuff, but I think there's, and what's driving that marketplace, late and low model equipment that there's not much of. Trying to find something right now with 500 or 1,000 hours on it is bit of a struggle, you know what I mean? So it's out there, but you just got to find it, right? So,
well, even, yeah, especially when you get even to split that even more in the 300 or less.
Well, yeah, that true.
It's out there, yeah. But good Lord, you're going to pay for it.
That's very true. So next week, I'm going to talk with a couple guys from down south. We're gonna kind of see the same thing. They've had two or three rather large auctions. They're going to swing through there and talk with those guys about that same thing. But long term, and you look out on your horizon, and with the guys you talk to on Twitter and the guys you talk to on Facebook, and just your everyday conversation that you have, do you see anything out there that you would say is going to change your direction when it comes to auction values stabilizing and maybe start showing an upward tick?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think there is, you know, other than what we just talked about, that there's, you know, there is flat to a slight uptick currently, and I don't see anything that's going to detract that or change that. I don't see anything making it skyrocket up, but I don't see anything for sure making the very slightest uptick that's existing. I don't see anything changing that either.
Right. The only thing that I see that would cause any kind of...
There's still demand for equipment, and not necessarily late model low hour. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be
stuff across the board.
What's that?
There's demand for stuff across the board. I mean, there's the right guy.
Oh yeah, right.
You know,
guys are looking for a deal.
Right. Well, the guys are also looking at upgrading what they have, and some guys upgrade. You know, think about some of these guys. I talked to a dealer today on the phone who is talking with a customer right now who bought all brand new stuff in 2013, and hasn't done a single thing, hasn't bought a single piece of equipment since 2013 of any kind.
Right.
Okay. So that guy's got, he'll have his fifth or sixth season, depending on when he bought that gun that got delivered, on that stuff that's coming to him. So he's probably due. You know what I mean? Like, he's probably due to look at doing some upgrading on, whether it's maybe getting a new combine or running the tractors he's got, or, you know, I don't know the guy's scenario or situation, but, you know, that's what we're faced with, and that's what we're going to continue to see. I mean, like I've said,
oh, yeah.
Guys are not upgrading their equipment because they want to, it's because they have to. And they're looking at how all that's going to affect their cash flow. And moving forward, that's going to keep driving the marketplace.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, so here we are. We're almost to the end of January. We've got about, what, 6-7 days left in the month. And we are going to be in pretty hot and heavy in full getting ready for planting mode across the country. So guys in Texas will be planting here end of March, so middle of March, something like that. And some guys are probably actually gearing up here for the first part of February, mid part of February, in the extreme southern part of the United States, like along the Gulf and all that kind of stuff. So
right.
That always kind of stirs up some stuff that – April, March, April, May time frame, there's always seems to be another pretty good slug of auctions that go through. So guys you talk to, things you see happening, do the groups you've talked with, anything like that, do you feel like there's going to be any drive to maybe see some larger spring auctions, maybe some retirement sales or something like that going into those 3 months of the year?
You know, I don't have, you know, anything factual as far as anybody saying, well, we're looking at doing this, or, well, we're looking at doing that. But, you know, for the last couple of years, and it's a bleak scenario, I know, but I know there's been some decent sized spring auctions that were kind of a last minute. Guy tried at like five different banks and nobody can float it, and that's it. I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that again this year. You know, another thing, and this is something that we talked about when Zach was on here, I'm a little surprised that there isn't, you know, maybe like a 3-4 dealers get together and have a spring focused auction. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like a planter tillage auction.
Yeah.
And typically, you know, you don't have enough dollars or pieces of that kind of thing to even if you're a, you know, big dealer like us to have your own. But I'm kind of surprised something like that doesn't exist yet. You know, it makes sense to me if you had 3 or 4, you know, bigger dealer groups kind of bring all your stuff together and, you know, your planting equipment, tillage equipment, you're having a little bit of trouble with, you kick the can down the road long enough and now it's time. I would think someday something like that would happen. I'm really surprised it hasn't yet, but I think that'd be kind of a neat deal. Now, the kicker to that would be, and we just talked about this yesterday, you and I, how gross and bleak the planter world was 5 years ago.
Right.
Even 3-4 years ago. And now it's like, can't get enough planters.
Right.
So that would have an impact on it. But even there still, you know, we've gotten some planters through wholesale channels here in the last couple months, but we still have planters that are aged, you know?
Yeah, we still have.
What's your thought on everybody come together and do a spring fling type of deal?
Oh, I mean, I think if you had like 4 neighboring dealers or something like that, where they all had a common, like area responsibilities that connected to each other.
Right.
It would make great sense because you're going to draw on every customer to get rid of the stuff that you need to get with. I don't think it'll ever happen because I don't think dealers are willing to cooperate with each other that much.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. I mean, they all play nice when they have to, but at the end of the day, you know, I don't really see that ever happening.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a great, I think it's a great idea, and it'd be, if we took our dealerships that we had and everyone kind of came together and said, all right, we're going to have a, I mean, they would fight over what town you had it in. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
There would be no, like, there's no neutral area that would be good enough for each of them. So, I think it's a great idea, and it would be a smart idea to bring, especially in like areas, you know what I mean? Like, a fire dealership is as long as it stretches, you know, from north to south. If you had the southern part of our territory and the people and the dealerships that we butt up next to and those kind of things all kind of come together, they all have like farming practices, you know what I mean? So it'd make great sense, but I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know how many guys would actually work together to make that happen.
That would be an enormous, I guess I didn't think of that. And in my role, that should have been the first thing I thought of. That would be an enormous political undertaking.
No, it'd be huge. Yeah, it'd be. It would take a lot, dude. I mean, even if you had it at like a place where they have a monthly auction, and that's, you're just going to have it there, it would still be some reason why you couldn't have it there. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It would be.
We're not hauling our shit over there. It's on that.
Right. I think what's going to say what you might see there if you did something like that, maybe an online thing, you know, like a.
Yeah, that was going through my head as we were talking about the politics of that whole deal.
You list 5 or 6 people's stuff together, but it's all at their lot, and then they just do it online. That would probably work. You'd probably get more to do that than you would the other way. Cat Auctions did that. That's how that whole thing got started. I don't even know if it's even around anymore or not, but it might have got bought by an Iron Planet. But, you know, 10 years ago or whatever it was now, that when I worked for the cat dealer back in Wichita, it was they started that, and that's what that was. It was cat dealers all came together and made their own auction company. And they were, you know, selling their iron through that deal there. So, I mean, it's definitely possible. It's definitely something that could happen, and you could easily have something like that happened, but it was an online thing, You know what I mean? It was.
Yeah, and see, and there's nothing wrong with the online thing. And I know, Big Iron has always done that. You know, they've always had like a hay focused auction and a harvest focused auction and a planting focused auction. They're pretty good with that. But I think, you know, as we talk about auctions that impress us, every damn one of them is an on-site dog and pony show.
Yeah, I mean that will always continue to be a, well, in the ag community, that's a, it has been for ever, you know,
An
the
event.
it's an event. Everyone goes to the local auction whenever there's one, whether they're going to buy something or not. They're going to go there and do whatever it is they, you know, talk to whoever they want to talk to. And
You know, it's almost like what's another, think of this deal. This just popped into my head. So we know this is golden knowledge.
this is going to be a nugget, folks. Pay attention.
Yeah, get the pen and paper. What's something that happens typically in the fall, especially in Nebraska, it's in the fall, that is a big dog and pony show for farm machinery. Farm show, right? An auction is kind of like a farm show that you get to take shit home.
Well, yeah, you get more than your.
That is why the, I think that is why the event part of it is such a big deal.
But I think that's starting to change, though. I mean, I think generationally, you're going to start seeing that change. Yeah, you still have guys that are showing up to go to the auction and buy stuff and do that kind of thing. I think when the next generation comes in and they start looking at auction stuff like that, I don't know how many of them are all that. I mean, I think if they had their choice between watching a Ritchie Brothers auction or a Sullivan Brother or Sullivan Auctioneers auction or something like that online, well, just look what happens to those auction crowds when they waive the online bidding fee. You know, they go from being on, especially in the middle of winter, they go from having 800 people there to having 200 people there and 800 people online. You know what I mean? So that online presence is growing. Now, you can argue whether or not that the people there would go home and if they lived within a 50-mile radius, would they go home and bid online? I don't know, but I think the younger generation is going to be more in tune to just being like, I'm just going to bid out online. I'm gonna watch
I
this.
think you're. I think you're right, and a lot of that is, you know, the world we live in. Totally non-farm related has changed so much. There's always something going on somewhere that you got to be at, chasing kids around to their stuff, you know, or you're involved in this organization and shit. I'd like to be at that auction. I can't make it, but I'll be on my phone.
Well,
You
think
know,
about it.
that type of deal.
So think of it from this angle though, too. If you were born, if you're 20 years old, you're in your lifetime is the only time that you really have ever been able to bid on an auction. If you're 40 years old or even 50 years old, the first half of your life you couldn't bid on an auction online. You know what I mean? So if you're a 20-something-year-old kid coming out of college, or even a 30-year-old kid that's been out of college for 10 years, and you're transitioning in to be a decision maker on the farm, most of your life you've been buying stuff online and bidding stuff online or eBay or whatever it was that you first cut your teeth on bidding something online with it, you know? So again, it's a generational thing, and when the current decision-making generation has turned the reins over to whomever they're going to turn those over to, that generation coming in is really comfortable about buying stuff online and bidding online.
Well, yeah, and I think it depends on you're 100% right. It is generational. I do, you know, I'm 39 years old and I do a boatload of shit online, and my reasoning is time. I don't have time to run over here and do this and do that, do this, where I can click, 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 it's done. You know, big time. But as far as the So I think you're totally right, but I also think the event aspect of it is still a big draw, even for the under 40 crowd.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the event portion of that will always be a bigger thing. But think about this: if you're a serious buyer and you're really seriously ready to buy a whatever full drive common, whatever it is, and you have an auction in your town that's got $6 million worth of iron on it, and then there's four or five other ones going on at the same time that have the same amount of iron, but they all have combines that you're looking for or four wheel drive that you're looking for, they all have those on there. You can bid those, all of those at the same time. You might walk away with six more than you want, but you could theoretically be watching all these different auctions go and bid those things all from the comfort of your home and save the 2 hour drive time back and forth. Now, don't get me wrong, some of the in the small town America, when you have these bigger auctions and stuff like that that take place, it is a community event. I mean, everyone in the community comes. That's, shows up, bankers show up, the farm guys show up, the whomever show up, and it's a big deal. And then the neighboring, folks all come in too, and they get
Right.
their if it's a Sullivan deal, they get their free whatever, whatever they're serving that day. And
Right.
everyone's happy and they go on. But some auction companies make it an event. You know what I mean? The night before is a whole dog and pony show. The day of is a whole dog and pony show. I mean, I think it really depends on who the auction company is and what they do as far as your marketing.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. I just think, and I just think that has a bigger impact than maybe some people think.
Yeah, but no, I don't think it does. I mean, like the Sinclair tractor auction, that's a good example of that. I mean, that was an event, man. There's $12 million worth of equipment there, 10, whatever it was, 10.
Right, exactly.
So they
Well,
were,
okay, and we were talking about it with Zach last week. The difference in crowd with the two SEMA auctions, okay? In 16, it was their first one, had a lot more stuff on it. Weather was a little bit nicer. Tons of people. This year, less of a crowd, but it was also less machinery. It was the second time they'd done it. The event, it was still, theoretically an event, but it was far less of an event than it was the first year. Then what you're saying, I think, comes into play. Like in Rochester, Minnesota, it's 15 degrees. I think I'm gonna look online on this one.
That too, though, the first time they had that sale in 2016, every auction that was of any magnitude was an event because it was like watching gladiators fight in the arena. Someone was going to shed a lot of blood, and that was
Right.
talk of the town. And well, fortunately for them, both times they did okay, I would assume,
Right.
based on what I saw happen.
Right.
So that kind of stuff drives that a lot too, but. I think there's. It'll be interesting. I mean, I'm watching that more and more. That trend line of total not like yesterday when we could see on the internet. I mean, it looked like there was quite a few people there watching that auction.
Oh yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
I don't.
And there hasn't been much for, most of your dealer auctions are from here east through the Corn Belt. There hasn't been a lot down in that country. So the event aspect of it was in effect, and I think the event aspect of it is what propped the values up.
Now,
But I look at that a little biasly too, because I am a fan of the Dog and Pony Show, so
I enjoy it too, but there are some days when I'm out there in my bib overalls and my freaking coat and hat and gloves and everything else, going like, man, this has been a lot better just to watch this online. But you
yeah,
don't.
oh, absolutely. I like the Dog and Pony Show at like 60 degrees at least.
But all that being said, I mean, when you do go to those auctions and you get a chance to talk to, all the buyers that show up, the other dealers that show up, the wholesale guys that show up, you gain a perspective of what's going on, what they're seeing happen in their area, because they're all from different spots. You know what I mean? So
Right.
you get a, when you watch one guy bid up a machine and you're like, what in the world is he gonna do with that? When he, I mean, what? What's he doing? And he's 30 grand higher than you are, but he's in wherever Michigan, or Indiana or whatever he's doing, that particular unit obviously must have some play there because, or he wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean? A professional buyer wouldn't be doing that. At least you would,
right.
You would hope so anyway. So,
which then makes you think, I hope we can get one traded for really right.
Right.
I know where it's going.
I know a guy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, I think we've kind of covered it here on the kind of auction segment we saw happen yesterday, how we think it's going to affect things going forward. Anything you want to say before we shut her down?
You know, I can't really think of anything. It's going to be interesting to see how say from now to the end of March, next 2 months, how things kind of go. And at least in my channel, there's still some pretty good interest, and it's legitimate interest. And I'm expecting, I'm not going to say good things or impressive things, but acceptable things.
Yep, and I think moisture is going to play a big part, more than it's had in any other year this year.
Yeah.
It's dry already in the south. You're talking about dryness over in drought situations that are creeping into the Corn Belt, Eastern Corn Belt. And so it'll be interesting to see how what happens there. Now, no one's in a big frenzy right now because no one's getting ready to plant anything. But, you know, come March, April, we'll start hearing about it, and that'll start shaping the marketplace.
Yep. Well, and then it'll turn into what last year was.
Right. Yeah.
Too wet when we planted, too dry when it's growing. Oh, look, record yield. Awesome.
Right. Yeah. The last three seasons in a row when it came to planting, we started out dry, and then we got a year's worth of rain in 2 weeks, and then it went dry again. So it'll be.
So what really needs to happen is them boys in Chicago need to just, you know, let's focus on only bad news for a while here and push everything up, and we'll just go with that. Deal.
What was a
let's shake on it.
Talk show I listened to one time, the guy was like, you know, droughts are awesome except for when it happens at your farm. So
right, that's exactly right.
hopefully it doesn't happen at our farm. So we'll see how it goes from there. So
yeah.
All right.
Amen.
All right, buddy. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast. I'd like to thank Aaron for being a guest on this episode. Remember, if you want to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC, or you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also send me an email at movingironpodcast@movingironpodcast.com. Moving Iron LLC now has a website you can visit, movingironllc.com. Here you can find information for the 2018 Moving Iron Summit in Las Vegas and current and past episodes of Moving Iron Podcast and articles from Moving Iron Blog. Throughout the year, there'll be guest bloggers writing on various topics from their point of view. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at your favorite podcasting platform. And if you shop Amazon, please use the Amazon click-through at movingironllc.com. It won't cost you anything, and you'll have the same experience that you're accustomed to while supporting the podcast. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.